American society is on the precipice of collapse. Civil war and violent revolution are no longer phrases for the history books. They're on the horizon. Your government has failed you, and we believe that the time for piecemeal solutions is over. The Founding Fathers created a new form of government and engineered institutions that set the stage for the 19th and 20th centuries. We must now do the same together for the 21st before it's too late. Welcome to the American Upgrade Project.
Welcome back to the American Upgrade Project. We have a special episode for you this week in which Badger and I decided it would be a good idea to maybe cover some current events and apply those topics to what we're trying to do here at the American Upgrade Project and see if there's some things that can help spark our minds to see what we could do to make some better first principles and how the government should work. Badger, do you have anything to add to that?
FTX is a cryptocurrency exchange built by traders for traders.
Well, okay. You're not even like leading them into the story.
FTX offers innovative products, including industry first derivatives, options, volatility products, and leverage tokens.
You're just hitting them with the story and they don't even know what's going on.
We strive to develop a platform robust enough for professional trading firms and intuitive enough for first time users.
All right. Well, as Badger has given away, in case you haven't heard in the news this week, or last week, I should say, there was a big crypto exchange that ran into some trouble and they had billions of dollars in assets and now their valuation has completely plummeted. And as of this week, they have now filed for bankruptcy. So pretty wild stuff. Any thoughts on that, Badger?
Yeah. Cryptocurrency. Another cryptocurrency exchange is down. I remember when MTGOX got hacked, and that was a big deal. And now FTX, well, they didn't get hacked. They just made some horrible decisions and lied and committed a number of potential felonies, I guess. So, yeah, not much faith in the crypto exchanges at the moment. I will tell a quick little anecdote at the top about my experience with cryptocurrency and Bitcoin in particular. So I originally got into Bitcoin back in 2011 before it was cool.
OG.
One of my friends, I can't take credit for it. One of my good friends found out about it on a website called Hacker News, which is owned by Y Combinator, I believe. And he found out about it. And at the time I was like, wow, this sounds really cool. What, you can just like mine these things on your computer and make money? So I had a little bit of money at the time and he didn't. So we worked together and we bought a gaming computer. We kind of like got all the components together, figured out what the best graphics cards were to mine Bitcoin with. And we started doing it. We started mining them. I remember,
how much did you put into that? What was your initial investment for that?
I can't remember. It was like 1,000 or something like that.
Not nothing. I mean, that's,
especially back then, it was quite a lot. I think we might've started a little smaller. We got like secondhand cards and stuff. And then eventually I remember we had to move it to his parents' house and stick it right in front of an in-window air conditioner just to keep the case cool enough. So we had the side of the case open, and then we just had the in-window air conditioner blowing directly into the case to cool it down because we were overclocking the GPUs to mine coin. And we were at one point mining about 5 Bitcoins per day. But at the time, they were only worth $30 each. So we were mining 5 a day at $30 each, and we sold them to pay rent.
Dude, that's still pretty amazing. I mean, if you were just making $150 a day
for doing nothing. It was not, well, I mean, well, yeah, it was,
well,
basically nothing.
What was the energy? Did his parents ever find out and be like, why is our energy bill so fucking high?
No, they weren't really like across that sort of stuff. They maybe just thought it was like a fun little hobby or something. We were pretty young at the time, but.
Did they realize that their electricity bill went up a lot when you guys started doing this, or or did it even impact their electric bill that much?
No clue. Didn't care. they didn't say anything about it at the time. But yeah, so the reason we considered holding on to them, we really did. But our rationale at the time,
just keep one.
Our rationale at the time was that the United States government was not going to allow cryptocurrency and Bitcoin to continue because it's a subversive currency. There's no means of tracing it, no easy means of tracing it at least. And it's literally an alternative to could be used as an alternative to the US dollar. So we were like, oh my God, they're going to shut this down. Let's have some fun while we can, make a little bit of cash and pay rent with it. It'll be great. But yeah, we obviously should have held on to it for longer. So yeah, eventually the difficulty just went up so high. I think we bought a few more graphics cards. We also built a Java applet miner, which basically would allow you to embed some code into your web page and then use anybody's CPU to harvest Bitcoin while they were on your web page. So it was pretty crazy because what would happen is if you had this, we had a website for it. And if you visited our website, you would hear your computer fan all of a sudden spin up. So you as soon as you visit our website, your computer fan would go. And as long as you had our website open in a tab, it would continue to do so because what was happening was we were utilizing, just by visiting our website, we were utilizing your CPU to mine Bitcoin for us. Now, the problem is that CPUs are incredibly inefficient at mining Bitcoins. The reason why you need a graphics card and not a central processing unit on your computer is because it has like thousands of cores, so it can do parallel computing much faster and better than a CPU is able to. So it didn't end up being a profitable venture. And I don't think many people would visit your website if they heard their fan booting up like that and saw their CPU usage cranking up to 100%. But it was fun at the time. We actually got some interest on some online forums and stuff, but yeah, that didn't work out.
Wait, was that novel or did you guys?
That was novel. Nobody else had done it.
And wow.
I don't think most people knew it was possible.
Oh, that's amazing. I've never heard this part of the story. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. To be honest, at that point, my friend was much more versed in coding than I was. So it was mostly him that led that effort. But I did build the website on the front end and stuff for it, which was pretty fun.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
man.
That's my own little Bitcoin story at the top. Pretty crazy stuff. But yeah, our problem was that we bet that the government would be competent and that they'd regulate or ban or whatever Bitcoin. But it turns out, you know what, like 12 years later, they still haven't. So,
well, I don't know. I mean, you say if a competent government would have gotten rid of Bitcoin, but I mean, is that something that, you know, here on the American Upgrade Project, is that something that looking forward that we would want our government to do? Is that what do we think of a competent government as stomping out anything that would subvert the American dollar or things like that?
Well, yeah, because, well, here's the thing is that you need to be able to tax it. So as long as Bitcoin is at some point converted to USD and at the conversion point, you can tax it, that's fine. But what we were picturing is an entire market of people just paying for services with Bitcoin. Like you go to a restaurant, you pay in Bitcoin, they don't pay tax, you don't pay tax, and you're just literally using an alternative currency to the US dollar. And that's kind of where we thought it was going to be going. And we thought the government would shut it down for that reason. But it turns out most people use it purely as a speculatory asset now and want to convert it to dollars to take winnings.
So in that sense, it's more like an investment and like stocks and things like that.
Right now it's a purely speculatory investment with no backing. It's not even like doesn't even pretend to be tied to a company or anything. So yeah, it's purely you're just buying NFTs, right? So that's what coins are basically.
Well, and so here's a thought I just had. So what if the government totally caved in, said, "Hey, no, it's fine. Totally just do whatever you need to do in Ethereum and whatever." But then now we're just going to treat that as a normal currency. And so we're going to track whenever you make withdrawals. And I mean, like these things are on public ledgers and stuff, right? So it should be fairly easy if you know someone's
identifier. Yeah.
Identifier.
I think they have like an identifier. It's been a long time since I've used it. But yeah, there's some, you have a wallet basically, and your wallet ID is what is available on the market. But as long as nobody knows what your wallet ID is, they have no way of determining, you know, tracing that transaction back to you.
Yeah, until someone's like, hey, this unknown wallet ID withdrew at this location. What does the video camera show? And then you basically know who that person, like, you know, like eventually it's not, it's only hard to track who is using crypto as long as it's being used for like black market purposes, right? If you're trying to do something in, you know, regular,
if you're participating in an exchange,
if you're trying to buy stuff from Nordstrom with crypto, like people are going to know who you are. Like the only way that crypto is black mark, like is unknown, is if you're just using it where people don't want to know who you are, kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, Nordstrom doesn't accept crypto, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Basically, you're basically right. So if you're traded on an exchange, you have to have an account that's going to require verification, and you're converting currency into crypto and back. So at that point, there's ways to find out who you are very easily. It's if you're trying to order something anonymously online, it's more difficult. And if you use a VPN, they can't trace your IP or anything like that. So it's a good tool for remaining anonymous online if you wanted to make anonymous payments online still. But that's not how most people use it. Most people use it these days as a speculatory.
Silk Road, baby. Silk Road.
Yeah.
I think. All right. Anyways, we've gone down that rabbit hole. And so... We won't go too much more into crypto on this episode, but I think it is pretty interesting to briefly talk about what did happen with FTX last week. So, quick recap, if anyone hasn't been reading the news about this, but there was a crypto exchange, FTX, as Badger mentioned, that has run into some issues. And why this is important is because this was one of the bigger exchanges for crypto, and with crypto the big thing is, you know, decentralized. All these people have to agree that someone has this, you know, token that they're claiming they have, and blah blah blah, you know, decentralized. But at the end of the day, there is still a centralized way of getting cryptocurrency. So there's these exchanges that you have everyone has to go to, so there's still these, you know, bottlenecks in which transactions have to occur. And this is something that is still causing issues. And so you have this exchange that's being run by this 30-year-old prodigy, you know, super smart guy, whatever. I had actually watched a YouTube video like 6 months ago explaining how this guy, Sam Bankman, who was the CEO, he stepped down, was the CEO of FTX. And he gave this interview with someone, I think, who, and maybe we can link the YouTube video just for fun in the episode here or something at the in the comment section. But he had given an interview with people who I think were just affiliated with Wall Street or typical investors and stuff, right? And he was trying to explain why you'd want to invest in this and that. And what he basically ended up describing to them, and they kind of called him out at the end of the video, is that he's basically just describing a pyramid scheme. So he's talking about how, yes, you know, certain crypto tokens don't really have value, but if enough people get together and say, hey, you know, these guys are working on a project, or these guys and gals, you know, or whoever is working on this project and they've got some good ideas, this is what they want to do, we buy these tokens. Now all of a sudden they have $2-3 million associated with whatever token this is. Okay, well that token now has that value. But they really haven't done anything with it, right? And then someone else says, oh, look, they've got $3 million in value of that token. Now I want that token. And this is what this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried, had explained, that this is how crypto gets its value and like should be traded. But all you're just saying is that it gains value because someone else has put money into it, but there's no value generated. No one has done any work. No one has created anything. So at the end of the day, if anyone ever wants to try and recoup their gains, then that's going to bring down the value. And then, you know, if enough people freak out, then it all collapses. And that's the
definition of pure speculation.
speculation and also a pyramid scheme in the sense that there was nothing to be of value in the first place. I mean, the pyramid scheme is, I'm only getting into this because I'm expecting in a return there, but for nothing. Like I'm getting in now because down the line, someone else is going to buy and that's how I'm going to make my money. That's the whole plan.
But now is when he was describing that, he's basically just describing cryptocurrency in general. He's not describing FTX specifically.
No. So FTX actually had more of a business appeal, right? So it was an exchange. It provided a service. But what ended up happening was that tons of people gave their money. Well, okay. They didn't give their money. They made deposits on the exchange, very similar to if people used, you know, if you've used Coinbase, right? That's a U.S. publicly traded company, Coinbase, that actually exists within the U.S. A lot of other crypto exchanges similar to FTX are not. FTX is based out of the Bahamas. So get a little weird with these companies setting up headquarters outside the U.S. They're evading some types of regulation, which you would think would already be a red flag in the first place. So people deposit money on these exchanges, and then with that money, they're able to exchange their USD or their dollars for other cryptocurrencies and et cetera. But what the company was doing, or I guess the exchange or whatever FTX was doing, was there was this other company that Sam Bankman-Fried had started earlier, which was a cryptocurrency trading company called Alameda, I believe. And this was started a while ago, and they were probably making money or doing whatever with cryptocurrency trading. And, you know, it's unclear. This is still in the very early stages of what the real facts are, but it sounds like it's very plausibly coming to the light that they were taking deposits that were either unused, or maybe they were somehow saying that they had done the transactions that they needed to do, but still moving people's money. But they were basically siphoning off people's money from FTX, giving it to the Alameda trading company to then buy crypto tokens that had not yet been listed on a major exchange. And so what that allowed them to do was they would create large positions in tokens that maybe weren't well heard of or hadn't quite reached a certain level of mass acceptance from the public. And then FTX would say, okay, now we're going to allow this token to be traded, this cryptocurrency to be traded on our exchange, after that Alameda company had acquired a significant amount. And so this term is called front running. It's highly illegal, as you would suspect, because it's extremely unfair that you have the preconceived knowledge that something that hasn't been adapted or put to use on a large scale would then be put on a large exchange that then once it's on that exchange, then it makes it so a lot more people have access to purchase it and to invest in it. And it just is kind of a moment to get a lot of new investors, right? And so that drives up the price. And Alameda, this other company, has already gotten in for the cheap price. They've gotten in at the bottom. And then it gets put on FTX, and then boom, it goes up in price. And then the Alameda is just selling for a guaranteed profit the whole way up as it goes up in price. And that's what happened. And now I haven't heard exactly why that caused issues as far as the fall of FTX.
Okay, two things. First off, isn't this kind of what banks already do? They take your money and then they hold on to like 10% of it per federal regulation, and then they invest the rest of it, right? Aside from the market manipulation aspect, just rewinding to what you were talking about earlier.
Right.
Isn't that what banks sort of already do?
They take your money and then they lend it to other people.
Yeah, and they also invest it as well in, you know, the stock market. Or generally in, like, I'd imagine index funds and stuff like that. Low risk. So what I'm saying is, what's wrong with FTX taking some of the money that's been put into their account and reinvesting it to make a profit.
I'm trying to think here. I haven't quite, because I know there's investment banking. I don't know if, I think banks have a lot of money in different pots. And I wouldn't say that, and maybe that's why they're able to do those kind of purchases, because they're a lot more diversified. But it's like, I don't think they're just only relying on customers who are making deposits within the bank to then make speculative investments. But I mean, giving out loans is also speculative, right? People could default on those loans, and the banks have to be responsible for that to some degree. I see what you're trying to say, though. I mean, you're saying that the exchange basically was also acting as a bank.
They kind of were. I mean, they're not only a place where you can invest, you're also just storing your money there, and then you can convert it to crypto or not.
Right.
So I think what maybe one of the larger issues is there's a complete lack of regulation. So there's no like no guaranteed minimum that they're holding on to. There's no government oversight like there is with banks. So it wasn't being treated by the government as the sort of institution that it is, if that makes sense. So there was no category for it. It wasn't being regulated. It wasn't being managed. And as a result, you have an obscene level of fuckery by this individual. What was his name at the top?
Oh, Sam Bankman Freud? Fraud?
His name's Sam Bankman. That's kind
Sam
of ironic.
Sam Bankman Fraud. No, Freed.
Freed.
But he is a fraud.
Sam Bank Fraud. Wow, that's... You cannot come up with a more apt name. I mean, that's ridiculous. I can't believe. I thought you were just completely mispronouncing it. He's literally Sam Bankfried, Bankman-Fried, whatever. That's hilarious. Isn't it just weird how sometimes, you know, there's some sort of level of synchronicity and things just work out like that?
The things the universe gives us, it makes you wonder.
It's hilarious. It's like, are we really living in maybe a simulation and somebody's just playing a joke? And you're like, oh, let's make this guy's name Bank Fraud and have him like run one of the largest exchanges in the cryptoverse. Super funny stuff. Okay. So second is cryptocurrency, purely speculative. It's basically the whole thing's a pyramid scheme. It's you buy now, more people will buy and drive up the price, and then you can sell. Now, the other thing you were saying is that he was working with this other agency or organization. What was their name?
No, that was his company.
Oh, so he had another company that he was transferring money to, and then he was artificially driving up the price on FTX for cryptos that he'd bought low?
Well, I wouldn't say it's artificial. It's just that it's like getting in before a stock goes IPO. Like it's because it's not accessible to other people, so they were buying something that was not, it was hard to access. There wasn't a lot of liquidity to get it. And
now, isn't there such a thing as an ICO, initial coin offering, companies do these days?
Yeah, but then it also makes a big difference to how many exchanges will allow you to get that, right? It's better to have a crypto that you can get on multiple exchanges rather than just one, because you want, you know, people have their money in different exchanges or something.
An initial coin offering is the cryptocurrency industry's equivalent of an initial public offering, IPO, which we're all familiar with. A company seeking to raise money to create a new coin, app, or service can launch an ICO as a way to raise funds. Interested investors can buy into an initial coin offering and receive a cryptocurrency token issued by the company. The token may have some utility related to the product or service that company is offering, or represent a stake in the company or project. So yeah, it's exactly like with stocks. Basically, you have private investors, you go to them, you say, hey, we're going to give you some of this coin before we actually launch it on the markets. And then with the idea that when they do eventually make it available to the public, it'll get driven up and they can make profits by getting in early. So you're saying he had access to currencies before they were released on this market and he was buying them?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, well, that's nefarious. And he was just allowed to buy them because they had to get set up in his system anyway, kind of a thing? Or?
Well, I think they already existed. It's just that they hadn't been put on many exchanges. So they weren't tokens that were easy to acquire.
Right, gotcha. Okay.
It's like with the stock markets, there's multiple stock markets that like they only have certain listed things, but with the crypto, the more exchanges that have your cryptocurrency, then the more access people have to obtain it.
Now, would you consider this an instance of insider trading? Because in a way, he had not only had insider information about currencies that were going to be offered, but were not yet, but also he had the tools and means to be able to buy them when other people could not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's basically what this is.
Now, why do you even need a cryptocurrency exchange? Why can't you just buy the cryptocurrency directly from whoever's offering it? Is it purely about converting cash to crypto in the first place to be able to buy it? Because you can buy Bitcoin with cash. You have to go through an exchange to do that. But then once you have the Bitcoin, you should be able to use that to purchase, or Ethereum or whatever, you should be able to use that to purchase other currencies directly. Why do you need to have it all in an exchange like FTX in the first place?
I'm not super versed on this, but I'll take a stab at it. So you need an exchange in order to make the transaction, right?
I'm not sure.
So there has to be a place where, you know, some people have a certain token or cryptocurrency, and you have to say, I want to sell at this price. And then someone has to go out and find a buyer who's willing to pay that.
Right. So it's really about facilitating buyers and sellers meeting up.
Yeah, that's an environment in which you're trying to make that exchange happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
it's not a user to user thing that really, like, you don't go to a forum and go, hey, I'm making a post here because I'm trying to...
You want to buy some crypto? I'm trying to sell it.
I'm trying to buy some... Yeah, that's not...
Not a very efficient way of doing things, yeah. Now, would it be possible to have an exchange where your money isn't tied up on it and it really just does facilitate those transactions? So it's like, hey, I want to sell some. Hey, I got a buyer. And then it sends you their wallet and whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it, instead of having your actual money in the system, you could have it on your ledger, which is an external cryptocurrency like a flash drive, which you can purchase. Or you could just use a regular flash drive. You don't need like this fancy one. Have your wallet and your money separate, and then just plug it in to make an exchange. But you'd have a market that takes it costs like a monthly subscription fee or something like that, and it just facilitates matching buyers up with sellers without actually holding on to your money. Would that maybe be a better approach?
So it's a subscription service?
Yeah, it could be a subscription service. So they could take like a percentage off of every transaction, like some marginal fee, like 0.2% or something like that.
Yeah. So I know at least to get the fiat currencies onto, I think what the service that's being provided is the exchange of the fiat currencies and those deposits, because those aren't on any kind of digital.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you should be able to exchange your fiat currency or US dollar for a certain amount of Bitcoin. So you should be able to buy Bitcoin with your US dollar through the currency, but then once you receive that Bitcoin, store it in your own personal wallet as opposed to storing it in their application on their servers. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think this goes back to what FTX was doing. I'm not so sure how exactly they were using people's funds, because I imagine that most people didn't have all their money just in dollars on the exchange. They probably had it.
They did.
No, they would have had it in some... Yeah, FTX had its own token, FTT, and that crashed. So I think a lot of people were in that token and somehow they were using that the token for the exchange to siphon money off and stuff. I don't know.
However, FTX reportedly lent over half of its customers' funds to Alameda, which then used them to bet on other cryptocurrencies and help out other crypto firms struggling to weather the overall downturn of the market. FTX's troubles started with a CoinDesk article that called Alameda's balance sheet into question by saying so much of it was made up of FTT, the exchange's token. That turned into a real problem when Binance founder Changpeng Zhao announced plans to sell the billions of FTT it held, which sent the value of the cryptocurrency into an unrecoverable tailspin. FTX has since struggled to stay afloat, with its customers trying to withdraw funds amid fears of this kind of risky financial arrangement between FTX and Alameda. So,
take what you just said there, right? So if a customer, it doesn't really matter what they have, right? If they hold anything of value on the exchange, if it's dollars, FTT tokens, anything, the exchange is basically still in the ownership of those things. Like it says that it's yours, but really they're holding it, right? And then they can kind of behind the scenes use those things, those tokens or whatever currency to trade with.
That's what I'm saying. Regardless of what form your currency is in, whether it's US dollar, FTC token or Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever it may be, all I'm saying is, wouldn't it be better if we had an exchange where you could buy your currency and then you immediately receive your currency and store it in your personal wallet? It only facilitates the transactions. It doesn't hold on to currency.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So it connects when you want to sell your currency, or it connects you with the buyer. When you want to buy your currency, it connects you with the seller. But then it just facilitates that transaction, and then you both receive your corresponding currency in return, and then you store it in your personal wallet. So it's just like an interface that facilitates the transactions, maybe takes a small transaction fee, or requires just a blanket, you know, subscription or something like that.
Right. That's how all these exchanges make money, though. They want to hold on to your money by saying, you know, you can't.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, people aren't going to invest in an exchange that like comes with all this risk. We've seen it with FTX. We've seen it with with MTGOX that got hacked.
Well, that brings up a great point. Let's think about all the people that got caught up in this. So who have you heard about who else has gotten caught up in this?
I know there's some hedge funds that had like a massive amount of money invested with it. So that's basically the extent of what I've heard.
So there's some celebrities. Who doesn't love some celebrities?
Juicy. Ooh.
The biggest to name, we got Tom Brady and Giselle. Power couple.
I don't know about that.
We got Stephen Curry. Basketball. You big basketball fan? Stephen Curry.
No.
Shaq.
I do know Shaq.
You do know Shaq? Okay. Okay. What about institutional investors?
This guy, Sam Bankman-Fried, he looks insane.
He's got great hair. He has really good hair.
Yeah, it's really good. His hair is good. But yeah, I don't know, something about him. I just looks a bit frazzled.
Frizzy or frazzled?
A little bit of both.
So BlackRock is invested.
Sam Bankman-Fried. BlackRock's invested? Oh, good. Screw them. I hope they lose all their money.
And we got some pension funds. We got Coinbase itself. So even Coinbase was invested in this venture. So other crypto exchanges cross investing, you know, in case someone else does your business better, why not invest?
I think the overarching story here and the takeaway for anybody who's listening to this is, A, if you're going to invest in crypto, keep your money to yourself. Don't like leave your money anywhere, because it's unregulated. It's not like a bank. And anything can happen. Just keep your money on your own personal, ideally cold storage. Cold storage means it's not connected to the internet. So we're talking about like a USB thumb drive or something. Keep your money there and don't share it with anybody else if you want to hold on to it. If you have more than $100, make sure you keep it in cold storage. Second point, cryptocurrency is complete speculation. It doesn't mean you can't make money off of it, but you're going to be making money off of it at the expense of somebody else in a Ponzi scheme. So if you get in early and it rockets up and then you can sell, fantastic, you made some money, but there's no inherent value there. I mean, you could argue that there's not much inherent value in the real stock market, but people still believe there is. So that's kind of worth something in and of itself. But when it comes to crypto, you're just playing with fire. So have fun, but I would be very skeptical about definitely keeping my money on somebody else's servers. That's for sure.
Well, with that, do you feel like there's anything that we've discussed so far that seems like, as we try to build a better government, is there something to take away from this conversation?
Well, there are some things to take away. And I guess one analogy I would have. So the question is when do you want the government stepping in to protect consumers from shady practices? Now, you might say, a libertarian might come by and say, never, the consumers can decide for themselves. But let me draw another analogy here. Let's look to the Food and Drug Administration, all right? So we all want to go to the store and we want to buy meat that we know isn't infested with mad cow disease. We want to buy vegetables that don't have salmonella or some other like carcinogens that are going to cause cancer in a few years. You want to just know that these stuff is like relatively safe to eat. Now, a libertarian might say, no, consumers will decide for themselves. But nobody has the time to go through and examine every single piece of meat they buy from the store or every single vegetable or every single supplement or whatever it may be. Very few people have a microscope at home where they can actually go down and look at the microorganisms that might be living in their meat they bought. We just want to be able to go to the store and know that like this thing isn't going to kill you. Now, is eating red meat every day healthy for you? No, probably not. But that's a decision you can make on your own. But we want to know that at least what you're getting is what it says it is, and it's not like blatantly detrimental to your health. I think a very this whole industry, the crypto industry, is a very similar sort of a situation. We want the government to ensure that what you're getting is what they say you're getting. And then beyond that, you can go ahead and lose all your money on the stock market if you want to. But if you're investing in an exchange, it needs to have some level of stability. And we need some transparency into its finances and its dealings. We need to make sure that the CEOs and the higher ups in it are not committing fraud or insider trading, which is basically what was going on. And then we need to proceed in that direction. So what I think is that the government should have been across this much sooner. If we had a more agile and adaptable government, it would have been, but it was not. And there was very little transparency. And this Sam Bankman-Fried got himself into a position where he got greedy and he thought he could make a little bit of money by doing some side deals and side hustles with other exchanges. He thought he could go in and buy these coins before they were made public. And at the end of the day, it all collapsed underneath his feet. And if anything, this sort of regulation and oversight would be to protect him as much as it is to protect, you know, his customers, because he probably got caught up in it, didn't realize what was happening. And now he's going to pay the price, probably spend quite a few years in prison. So
FTX is headquartered in the Bahamas. So at a certain level, you know, this is beyond the jurisdiction of the United States.
Yeah, we'll see how that one's prosecuted. I don't know enough about law to determine whether or not he'd be extradited or anything like that. But I'd imagine there are enough big players involved that they're going to get him. You know what I mean? Like one way or another. I mean, there are some hedge funds that were invested in FTX to the tune of like millions, if not billions of dollars. So yeah, I think he's definitely made a lot of enemies at the very least. And I wouldn't be surprised if they find a way to prosecute him. He'll never be able to step foot back in the US. That's for sure, without, you know, being prosecuted. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Bahamas sounds like a pretty nice place to be.
Yeah, no, it's a good place to siphon your crypto and try and make off like a bandit.
Yeah, weren't there some reports he tried to like grab a bag and fly to another country or something like that?
Grab a hard drive and get the hell out of Dodge? Yeah, something like that. I'm not too sure about that. Last I heard, he's still in the Bahamas. I think he's been... I don't know if he's been arrested, but I think the cops know where he's at and they're keeping tabs on him. So it's not like he's getting out of there or anything. But, you know, I'm trying to think about if this is something that would potentially happen in the States under regulation. And maybe things do work the way they're supposed to. if you look at an exchange like Coinbase, so that's an exchange that's been around for a long time. It's actually a publicly traded company now. And not that their stock price is doing anything great or anything like that, but it would be really hard to imagine something like this happening with Coinbase, because you have the SEC and the FTC has way more access to companies that want to go public on the US stock exchanges. And in order to get funds and get money through those means, you have to open your books and you have to be more transparent. And it just seems like if that was something that FTX had tried to do, it would have instantly been identified that they're involved in nefarious behavior and bad practices. And so maybe this isn't a case as far as, maybe this is the way things work. And in the real issue here was just that there was too many people trying to make money and kind of skirting the margins and saying, oh no, it's okay, we'll invest in this Bahamas company because this 30-year-old, you know, he seems really smart, and yeah, they're not very well regulated.
It's the hair, but people think he's like Einstein because of the hair.
Dude, seriously, I mean, I don't know. It's crazy. They showed like some other chick that was like the CFO.
FTX was valued at $32 billion earlier this year.
Yeah.
Pretty massive.
Fall from grace, huh?
Yeah.
And then they were also doing a lot with like charity, and what Tom Brady's wife was like supposed to be the head of that. And it's just like so crazy. I don't know. It's hard to understand. A lot of people got swept up in this.
Yeah, I read another headline saying, experts say Sam Bankman-Fried's best legal defense is to say he's just really, really stupid. Mismanaging your company and losing a bunch of other people's money is not criminal.
Got it. Wow, what if that's like the new defense? It's just like, I'm actually
It depends
really
if it's criminal or not. For a criminal case, there has to be deception. And there's so little regulation around crypto. It's just, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out legally.
Oh no, that's brilliant, right? So you have to show deception, right? But if you're just saying, oh no, I had bought into it too. I fully believed in taking my customers' money and giving it in front.
And to be fair, he probably did.
I thought that was a good way
to
make money.
He probably did. He's a, you know.
That's not legal.
It's a lot to be on for a 30-year-old just to build a little website and then all of a sudden be managing $32 billion. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. You know, I get it.
Well, he was valued at like $16 billion. His net worth was $16 billion. Right.
You should have taken it and ran. Why the hell would he stay in front of the company? Just get your money and hand off to somebody, buddy. $16
billion. Yeah.
Think about it. He could be a 16 billionaire. Instead, he's likely destitute and on his way to jail.
Well, that's probably all assets that the second you try and sell any of it, the stock or the price of it just plummets. Yeah. Because there's not enough people.
Yeah, that's the problem with crypto. When they say, oh, this crypto guy is worth this much, it's like, well, yeah, that's how much he has in crypto at its current value. But as soon as you start selling it, the value plummets like pretty much immediately. So they're probably worth significantly less than that. Like, I'd reckon in a lot of these cases under $1 billion, and they say they're worth like $30 billion, you know?
It is very similar to stock in that sense.
Yeah.
Like when you talk about these billionaires, and not that these people don't have a shit ton of money, but it's still like when you talk about these Elons and Bezos and stuff, it's they don't have this in cash.
It's all tied up in their companies. That's part of the reason why tax the rich is more complicated than it sounds. What you really need is like a value added tax that taxes the company at the means of production, not actually these people at their point of income, because most of them rarely take salary or take income. They have enough to live off of, but it's not like they have like billions of dollars just sitting in a bank somewhere. It's all tied up in their company.
Yeah, it's not cash.
So it becomes capital at that point, I guess.
Unless you're Elon. I mean, I did the calculation today for a different reason. I was talking to a friend, and he actually sold this year and last year roughly $40 billion worth of Tesla stock.
Now, is that all to finance Twitter or?
Not entirely. So remember last year he had made a tweet randomly that was saying, what was it saying? It said something about, I can't really remember. He did some poll, but really it came out that it was like he needed to sell stock anyway. And it was just more of he needed to sell it for tax purposes because he had some options that he were coming to an end, and it was like he needed to take value then. And then it just seems like every time anything he does comes up to him wanting to just sell stock for some reason, but he doesn't want people to get freaked out that like he's selling all his Tesla stock because he thinks
Tesla's having issues or something.
Yeah, everyone just looks to him to be like, all right, as long as Elon's in, I'm in too. But if he starts selling, then that's a red flag.
Well, hell, if he actually manages to crack full autonomy in the next coming years, I know he thought it was going to be here a lot sooner than it is, but to be fair, it's an insurmountably difficult problem. And they do seem to be making great strides towards it. I think Tesla will become one of the most valuable companies in the world, if not the most, because solving full autonomy and having completely hands-off taxi cabs, completely autonomous taxi cabs running around picking people up, it just allows, I think the way he put it was, it would allow like a five-fold increase in the amount that you're able to actually use a vehicle. And if you translate that into how that would play out economically, you could see it becoming a massive, massive company. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I think, yeah, I guess we're getting a little off topic. Do you have anything else to say on FTX? It's pretty fucked. It's basically just a story of a guy who got in over his head and tried to play some games and it didn't work out. And now there's $32 billion in the hole. Does that about sum it up?
Yeah, I guess it's just those are games that a lot of people try to play. But it's always interesting when a lot of other big name people get sucked into it. And potentially that was just where the investment world was at. And they were willing to take big risks. And they saw something that looked like it was making a lot of money. And they thought, yeah, let's put some money into this. This looks good. This guy's making some money. And we want to make some money too. And at the time, I think money was really cheap. You know, interest rates were low. And so it's like, yeah, no sweat off our back. Let's give it to him. And now it's a year later. And as the monetary markets and things have changed, things have gotten a lot tighter. And that's when things start to, the bubbles, as they say, the market bubbles start to pop. And I think this is just one of the many bubbles that will pop on our way down as things become more strict with easy money and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Well, look, thank you everybody for listening to this week's show. A little bit of a diversion from our normal course. I think we'll probably do these current event episodes once in a while when we find something interesting in the media or that's going on in the current world. And we can kind of tie that into our overall mission of re-engineering government, societies, and institutions. And that how would we solution these issues and prevent them from happening in the future going forward? Just an interesting like kind of angle to look at this all, a new lens to look at this all through. Some of our upcoming topics, not entirely sure of the order here yet, but we still need to talk about government. How do we reform government and get better leaders in government? Social media, the intelligence, like the CIA, all that fun stuff. Healthcare, environment, the pharmaceutical industry. Diplomacy, how should we be talking with other countries, city planning, prisons, policing, all sorts of stuff like that. So a lot of interesting topics coming up. We're looking to get guests on as well soon here. But yeah, thank you for tuning in to the American Upgrade Project. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys and gals.